The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-supported 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Greg Audell. I'm proud to serve on the board of writers in the schools where we help kids tell their own stories. As always, when you and I get together, I urge you to have a special treat while you listen, because it is story time, my friends. I'm enjoying milk and cookies with our guru of the control room and our favorite combat veteran, Jacob Reiner, who, as always, has the challenging task of making a sound clear while he prevents any technical glitches like those from being broadcast out. How you doing, Jake? Did you and Shay manage to stay dry this week?
We did manage to stay dry.
And happy birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you very much,
You
sir.
Don't look a day over 60.
I guess that's a good thing.
I guess so.
Absolutely.
I hope everyone who was affected by Houston's recent floods are accessing every bit of available help. In the very best of traditions of Houstonians, volunteer groups are working hard, along with Mayor Turner's office, to provide immediate assistance to those whose homes were flooded. And I'm so proud to see so many folks literally rolling up their sleeves and getting really dirty to help their neighbors. Right now, thousands of amazing stories are being created through these interactions, as well as new friendships. And I hope to share some of these stories with you on future shows. And if you have a story about the flood, or those who helped you, or something you learned, we'd love to hear about it. Please tell us about it on our Facebook page, our So What's Your Story Facebook page. You might even find yourself a guest on our upcoming show. We imported tonight's guest from the proudly and all-around amazingly weird town of Austin, Texas. Carol Ramsey writes, she performs, and she teaches the true personal story. She has performed over 30 stories in Austin, Houston, Chicago, and London, and many more cities to come, I'm certain. And I've enjoyed her at the Houston's Moth Story Hour, which is where we met. She's taught the craft of storytelling all over the world, and she maintains a calendar of storytelling shows in Austin at austinstorytelling.com, and she builds a community at Austin Storytelling on Facebook. She has a high-tech job during the day and lives with her husband and three girls in Austin, Texas. Carol, welcome to Houston, and welcome to So What's Your Story?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me here. I grew up in Houston, so it's great to be
good.
Here.
Oh, so this is a homecoming.
This is a homecoming.
And I'm also impressed that you drive down from Austin for the Moth.
I do drive down on a Tuesday night to go to the Moth in Houston, and then I drive back.
Well, it's worth it because your stories are wonderful, and that's why we wanted you here tonight. I mean, we work hard to bring strong guests to our audience every week. And whether they're professional storytellers or simply someone with one great, amazing story, we're proud to share them with you. But I've been looking forward to hearing your story because you've made storytelling a significant part of your life. When and how did the importance of storytelling reveal itself to you?
There were two different answers I have to this question. And one is when I went to Lithuania for the first time on a random chance and a random situation. And I met these women who were older, and they were of Lithuanian descent, and they had lived during World War II. And I heard their stories. And their stories were so powerful to me that I felt that I never really had understood history before until I had a one-person story of what it was like to be there and what it felt like and what kinds of decisions you had to make. And that experience of being in Lithuania that first time, I learned that I'm never going to try to understand history or try to understand anything without also listening to stories of a single person. It just has to be part of the whole depth of understanding. If you want to really know something, you have to know the story.
Wow. Well, since the roots of your storytelling, the love of storytelling, is in Lithuania, tell us your story about teaching far, far away from home.
This is from my second trip to Lithuania. And really, it was just a few years ago. It's hard to imagine that's true. So here's my story. I was sitting on a bench in a hallway crying with my favorite teacher's arm around my shoulders. She said, "Carol, they can't do that. The eye rolling, the whispers, the way they won't look at you. It's classic bullying." "But they aren't beating me up. except Red might beat me up. She is so mean. It doesn't have to be physical to be bullying. It's okay to go to your class. I'm going to go to your class right now and talk to them. This is not okay. No, don't. I need to stand up for myself. I can't believe I let them make me cry. Now, this might seem like a typical day in an elementary school, just in your neighborhood, but I was 46 years old. I was the teacher. My students, they were adults. I was a Western-educated American. Most of the students were Soviet-educated Lithuanians, except for Red. She was Russian. This was 2013. The Soviet Union had fallen 25 years earlier, but in my class, the Cold War had returned. APL's a conference in Lithuania for Lithuanian public school teachers, where they take classes from visiting American teachers about Western methods of education. My session was teaching with stories. I had this idea that in the language classroom, students could write and perform true personal stories the same as they wrote essays or performed a play. And in other classes like history, math, and science, personal histories could complement the facts and figures. And that idea I had gotten from my first trip to Lithuania. I love the power of personal stories in the classroom. So I walked back into the classroom. I told the students that the break was over and asked them to sit around the one large table in the middle of the room. Everyone was quiet. The air felt thick and heavy. I asked them, "Why are y'all so mad at me?" Red responded first, "Of course." And eventually the others joined in. It ends up there were actually three reasons why I was very close to getting punched in the face. Number one, yes, they do know about the internet. I had a lesson that morning about finding curriculum-specific stories on the internet, but through the interpreter, some of the meaning had gotten lost, and they thought I was introducing the internet to them for the first time. And they certainly already knew about it. So I said, okay, I gotcha. Y'all know about the internet. I'm sorry. Number two, this was not the class I signed up for. I said, but y'all registered for teaching with stories. How could that be not clear? They said, no, they had not registered for that. They registered for analysis of linguistic competencies. I said, I don't even know what that means. They said, we know. So as a side note, I looked into that confusion on their part, and they were right. A conference admin had seen my title teaching with stories, and he thought the Minister of Education would reject the class because it did not directly tie to the official state curriculum. And so instead of like talking with me or giving me a heads up or maybe working on that together, he just changed the title to something that would get past the administrator. But it did put me in a kind of awkward position once I got into the classroom. So back to the class. Number three was the most important. The most important reason that I was about to get punched in the face was because my ideas were dangerous. People who spoke to a group needed to have authority and credentials so his words would be trusted and believed. Individual stories? If each student thought their individual story was important, how could the teacher lead the classroom, and how could a government lead its people? What would keep each person from having their own ideas, so people would have nothing in common? I took a few deep breaths. I said, well, what if true personal stories were like Lithuanian folk music? Lithuania had a strong tradition of folk music. When it was illegal to sing the songs during the 50 years of Soviet occupation, the songs were passed on to new generations in secret. Y'all have formally trained singers who sing for large audiences and fancy performance halls, but you also have folk songs that everyone sings. Maybe writing and performing are like that. Sometimes it comes from people in official positions in fancy concert halls, and sometimes it's just everyday people sitting around a table. And what if the individual story did matter? What if both of them mattered? Just in different times and different places. They considered my idea, except for Red. She did not. The students did not want to do the big showy performance I had planned for the last day of class. I had to uninvite the guests, and I didn't print out the programs. We sat at a big table and told our stories to each other. Some were the same, like what it's like to be afraid of flying. Some were very different, like what it was like to be so hungry as a child after the war. Everyone except the storyteller, was quiet, and there was a magic in the air, a quiet magic of understanding and connection. And after, at the end of class, Red came up to me, and she gave me this hand-knit lace scarf that she had made by hand. And she still didn't like me. She still didn't agree with me. But she gave me this scarf to have as a souvenir. And our Cold War was over.
That is beautiful. One thing I love about this story is the way you pulled yourself up over your intimidation, over your fear, and you found a commonality with them that I've said before I think is universal with storytelling. I think that's one thing all cultures share. Do you keep in touch with any of the students?
Some of them are on Facebook, and so I see them every now and then, but they post in Lithuanian, so it's hard to keep up very much.
What do you want the audience to take away from this story?
There we go through, when we live in different countries and different times and we have such different perspectives, that I think really anyone in the world, if you got around a table and you kept it to a true personal story, I think you could find a connection with anyone.
I think so. This is Greg Audell with Jacob Reiner in the control room, and we are visiting with Austin's Carol Ramsey on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Our own Dr. Hank Robichek emceed the Houston Storytellers Guild 28th Annual Liars Contest a couple of Saturdays ago, and this is just one of many unique and fun events put on by our sponsor. Jacob, will you tell us about our proud sponsor, the one and only Houston Storytellers Guild?
Well, of course. The Guild meets the fourth Tuesday of the month, which happens to be next Tuesday, the 26th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Printing Museum. This is located at 1324 West Clay. For a lot more details, go to www.houstonstorytellers.org and be sure to visit us on our Facebook, So What's Your Story. There you can get the scoop on our fabulous guests and events in Houston storytelling. And make sure before you leave, please press like.
Yes, please like us. Thank you, Jake. Next week, Warren Holloman will be sitting in this chair as he welcomes a truly special guest who is at the epicenter of this Houston storytelling community. Elizabeth Sosa Bailey was such a fan of NPR's Moth Story Hour that she figured out a way to bring the Moth Story Slams to Houston every single month. And these are not small events, my friends. Hundreds and hundreds of people attend on a Tuesday evening every single month at Warehouse Live because they know there are few things more entertaining than real people telling their real stories. And because Elizabeth decided to act on her passion, Warren and I were both given the opportunity to become storytellers. That led to us meeting Dr. Hank and for us joining you on So What's Your Story? If you have ever wanted to make something big happen, tune in next week. I've been proud to be part of the storytelling community for exactly 1 year. And making that decision to step out on that stage for the first time was one of the best decisions I ever made, and I urge you to do the same. I'm really proud that our show and The Moth has such a great relationship, and you're going to really enjoy getting to know Elizabeth. If I can speak, Carol, on behalf of every man for just a moment, I think most of us think we understand the additional challenges that women face in their daily lives, but in fact, I don't think we have a clue. I have a lot of women in my family, and I'm always thinking about things, you know, I want to talk to them about or things I want, you know, younger women to be conscious of. But when I heard your story that occurred early in your academic career, I realized just once again just how unaware I am of so many things that, you know, women have to take for granted. Tell us your story that happened early in your academic career.
His name was Steve. He was tall and well-built. He had a deep voice, intense eyes, and a commanding presence. If he played football, he'd be a linebacker. I used to look over my shoulder to see if Steve was following me, especially if I was alone, on my morning run, or if I was walking in my car at night. I worried that I wasn't looking over my shoulder often enough, because I couldn't look over my shoulder all the time. This was in the early 90s. I was 22 years old and teaching at Brazosport College in Lake Jackson, Texas, just about an hour south of here. Steve was a 30-something-year-old student in one of my classes, and we had this conflict, and it began with a game of Family Feud. I loved playing Family Feud. So we'd do it as a class review before a test. Each row of desks was a family. Each family appointed a leader. And when the family got a question, they would discuss the answer amongst themselves, and the leader would pick the team's final answer. And if the answer was right, everyone on the team would get a point on their test. It was silly, and it was fun, but the team debates and the competitive drama of it all helped the students learn and remember the material. So on this particular day, when class ended, after playing Family Feud, I was sitting at my desk in the front of the class, and Steve came to talk to me. His face was red and angry. He put his hands on my desk. He leaned forward, looming over me. He said, "I want my point back." I said, "What?" And he continued. He said, "I knew the right answer, and the leader picked a different answer, but my answer was right, and I want that point." And I told him, "That's not how the game works, and I'm not giving you back your point." And then he left. So the next day, my boss called me in his office. He said Steve was very unhappy with how I settled the point issue and that he wanted to drop my class, even though it was well past the drop deadline. Well, I thought we should just follow the rules because there's a drop deadline for a reason, and no other students get to drop after the drop deadline. So I said, no, he shouldn't be able to drop the class. And I explained to my boss how the review game worked, and I also explained Steve's intimidating posture and how he really had intimidated me. My boss said, "Well, it sounds like a personality conflict to me." And I said, "No, it wasn't. It was a student being crazy." But we agreed that he shouldn't be allowed to drop my class. My boss would let Steve know the decision. On the next day, Steve came to my office. I was alone. It was late in the day. There weren't many people around. He put his hands on my desk and leaned forward, looming over me. And this is what he said. I remember it word for word, more than 20 years later. "You talked bad about me. Now everyone is against me. It is as if you said I was a rapist. And because you said I was a rapist, no one is on my side anymore." The word rapist hung in the air. It was said on purpose. The overall wording was strange, as if he had worked really hard to find a way to be threatening without making a direct threat. It felt experienced and practiced, as if being threatening wasn't new for him. I froze, and he left. I walked downstairs to my boss's office. He said, "You know what, that Steve guy? He came in here and put his hands on my desk and leaned over and was very intimidating. I see what you mean about that." And I said, "Yeah, maybe you should believe me next time." And then I said, "I want him out of my class." And my boss said, "Yes, I'll make it happen." The next day, the college counselor came to my office and closed the door behind him. He said, "I'm not allowed to tell you any details. All I can tell you is that you may not be alone with Steve at any time. If he approaches you and you're alone, you must leave immediately and find a public space with other people." Then he turned around and left. I had so many questions. What if I can't find other people? What if he doesn't let me leave? If I'm at a college, there usually was somebody around, but what about other places? What about my morning run or walking to my car at night? And Did he threaten me? And is he a rapist? This is well before the internet, and the counselor wasn't allowed to say. Looking back, the strangest part is I didn't tell the counselor about Steve's talk about rape. I didn't tell my boss or a coworker or a friend or my mom. I was scared. I didn't want to get Steve in more trouble because then he would be even more angry. If I complained, I wasn't sure if people would believe me because it would be my word against his. And even if they did believe his words, they might think I was making a big deal over nothing because he hadn't physically hurt me. This happened about the same time as the Anita Hill sexual harassment testimony with Clarence Thomas. And it's happening even today with Bill Cosby and the women who are coming out for the first time now with their experiences. And my experience is different than theirs. But when people ask, well, why didn't they tell someone about their harassment when it happened? I understand why. I know why. Today, my 19-year-old daughter is in a very different place. She probably wouldn't put up with any of this. She would tell her boss if he didn't believe her, and she would tell people about a threat. And that is the one thing that I want to come out of this story with, is to raise my daughter so that they trust what they sense and they trust what they feel and they speak out when something happens. Because no woman should feel like rape is likely to happen to her. Steve was expelled from the college about 6 months later. I don't know why. The counselor wasn't allowed to say.
Wow. It's not only a powerful, but I think it's an important story. And I think we all need to tell, not just women, but specifically all the girls and women in our life, that if there's something that makes you feel uncomfortable, tell someone. And if they don't believe you, tell someone else.
Right. And there's might not be always a perfect answer or a perfect way to handle it, but if you talk to someone, you will end up it will be at least a lot better than keeping it inside.
I think as a general rule, if it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right. And and as you allude to, this is probably how someone conducts themselves time and time again. So by speaking up, you might be saving victims down the road.
Right. That's a good
now,
point.
Now, one question that pops into my mind with this story, because I can see it going either way, is does what happened to you affect your view of having guns on campus, which is a huge debate right now?
I don't think, like, for any particular individual, like, when I think about this guy, Steve, I don't know that he would have considered what the poster says or he would have considered what the law said in his personal decision. But I also think about during my teaching what it would have been like if open guns were normal.
Right.
That it would have felt so different on campus, and it would have felt so scary to understand that that's a normal part of your day. And if we ever get to a place in Texas where everyone having guns is really the norm, I can't imagine how that would be safer.
I agree. You are listening to Austin Storytelling, Carol Ramsey, right here on Corporate Free Pacific Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. If you have program ideas, want to be a guest, or just comments, drop us a line on our Facebook page or send us a note to drhank@kpft.org. And Dr. Hank, Warren, or myself, or maybe even Jacob, will get back to you very soon. I promise. Who was the storyteller in your family growing up?
I would say it's probably my Uncle Jerome. He always had stories. He was a police officer, and then he was a judge. So he had lots of stories about maybe poor choices. And he also had a lot of fishing stories. All the fish were big.
What would you tell that person who thinks they have a storyteller in them, but they haven't taken that first step on stage yet?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say just do it once. Like, it's not for everybody, and maybe everyone doesn't want to do it on stage, but do it once and see what it feels like.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I didn't know what it was going to be like, but it's been a wonderful experience and it's been a wonderful year.
Do you know what surprises me the most is when I tell a story and I learn something from what someone in the audience says.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In honor of our guest, Austin's Carol Ramsey, we're going to close the show tonight with one of the finest Austinites in or out of music. Sarah Hickman was the Texas State Musician in 2010. She gives her time, talent, and passion to many important causes, and I am very proud to call her a friend. This is her hit, Simply. Scooter's next on the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease your way into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Remember that everyone has a story, and everyone has struggles. So whenever the opportunity to do so presents itself, be good to each other. I'm your host tonight, Greg Audell. On behalf of Dr. Hank, Jacob, and Warren, we're reminding you, as Dr. Hank says every week, it is never too late to live happily ever after.
I'll always want you to want me. I'll always want you to care. We can't be one, but two is fine with me. You've got your time and I've got mine. I don't want you under mine. I just need you to understand.
KPFT celebrates National Poetry Month with Writers in the Schools. Join us every morning at 5:57 a.m. for poetry written by Houston's young people. Writers in the Schools is a nonprofit that teaches students about writing and empowers them to be creative. KPFT presents some of the best and brightest student poetry as part of this month-long celebration. Again, just tune in mornings at 5:57 a.m. right here on KPFT Houston.
Side radio program.